Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 50. Yes, we finally made it, of Talkback Tech, recorded on Tuesday, the 28th of February. It's also the odd chance it's actually a leap year this year, so we're a day. We almost made it to the odd day. Talkback Tech is a show where the listeners decide what we talk about, which would be you guys if you got a hold of us on tbt@thesecrethub.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Tomkinson, MrTomKinson, or Aussie TBT as well. Or the Talkback Tech homepage is, talkbacktech.com. All the information for the YouTube channel and the RSS feeds for the audio and everything is all there. So go and check that out. Also, there's the TBT Facebook fan pagey Duv Malaki. You can just search for Talkback Tech there and get a hold of that. We do this usually Tuesday nights from around 7:30. At least we start broadcasting around that time. The show usually ends up being quite a bit later at live.thesecrethub.com. You can also check out radio.thesecrethub.com. That's up 24/7. When we're live, we switch it over, or it's playing the latest few episodes in a rotation there. So I'm your host, Will, and this week it is Frosty's week to be with us. So how you doing, mate?
I'm good, Will. How's yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad. I have to admit, I feel sorry for PA. It was supposed to be his week last week, and I did send out a tweet saying that I couldn't get home in time. Unfortunately, he didn't actually check his Twitter, and so he sat around for like an hour and a half waiting for me to turn up. So, sorry, PA. my bad. So, yeah, hopefully we won't let that happen again. But yeah, that's what happened last week. There was no show. I couldn't get home in time, and then it was just going to be too difficult. So but we're back this week. We've actually semi-organized this week. We even have a couple of real legitimate stories. So, it's all happening. And I don't know if you noticed, Frosty, you know how I was saying I'd play the intro pre-show so that it'd sort the bugs out? Well, it worked perfectly pre-show, and of course, come to the actual intro to the show, and it played up, didn't it? So, oh well. Alrighty, couple of things just quickly. You know the QR barcodes? You know, you see those strange-looking square, you know,
lots of pixels.
Yeah, kind of. I guess they probably used to call them, were they what they used to call 3D barcodes, or are they different again? No, they're different again, aren't they? I think.
Sure,
yeah.
On that.
But yeah, the QR codes. They're basically, you know, they hold information. You can make them say whatever you want. You can link them to a web page. You can put, you know, basically like a modern version of a business card. And there's all different types and styles. And what you basically do is you load a program up on your Android or your iPhone or virtually any smartphone, and it's a barcode reader. Of course, it just looks like the camera there because it's it does use the camera. But if I was to hold that against the barcode and scan the barcode, you could hear it beep then, and then it brings up the list of the barcode, the number on the barcode, what it does, all the information about it. Sounds great in theory. So I thought, okay, cool. We need some security barcodes for work, because we're having problems with people swapping batteries in vehicles and things like that, and trying to claim them under warranty. So I thought, oh well, I'll get myself some security, you know, those ones that peel off and say void when you try to peel the sticker off, those silver ones.
Yep.
Thought I'd get myself some of those and use those so I can scan the barcode, put the VIN number of the vehicle in and the date it was installed, so stop this from happening, which is great. Ordered 100 of them. You know, they're on sale for $7 or something for 100. I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. They turned up the other day. I got all excited. I thought, oh, this would be great. I can, you know, start doing it today. So I even purchased a relatively cheap, well, it was like $1, business management, invoice management software. I got to the first job and stuck the barcode on and went to scan it. No. The barcodes, because they're done in that really bright silver with the black writing on them. Hey?
They were too reflective?
Well, they're either too reflective or the barcode itself is too small. So I tried, I dicked around for like 15 minutes. I was determined to get this thing to scan, and it doesn't matter what I did, I could not get it to scan. So I'm assuming that's what the problem was. Was not very impressed, mind you. I mean, I don't mind, you know, it's not like it cost me really anything. It cost me $7 or something, that's no big deal. But it's the, you know, just the time and hassle that I mucked around trying to get this thing to work. And you can see there, you can see the actual the stickers there, and they're great because they had sequential barcodes or sequential numbers on them, and then they had the barcode, and theoretically it should have been great. So I even tried a mate of mine actually has a proper barcode scanner that scans those QR codes, and his scanner wouldn't scan them. So I'm now waiting for a reply back from these guys to say, oh no, we've tested them, they're fine. You know, so I was not impressed.
Of course they're going to say they tested them and then they're all fine.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, okay, how does that help me, you know? So anyway, so now I'm back to the drawing board on how to go about doing it. Because all the security tags, just by the nature, because they are really, really thin aluminium tags, they're going to be reflective. They're either black on silver or silver on black. So I'm going to have to do a bit more hunting around and try and find something, because I was really disappointed, you know. I was all excited to actually have something that worked off eBay. So, but anywho,
that was the first mistake.
Yeah, well, exactly. I expected something on eBay to work. How dare I? Oh no, they usually work the first time. Usually the first two or three times you use whatever it is, it works. And then after that, it doesn't.
After that, yeah.
This one didn't even work the first time. So they're like, oh, they could be faulty, but you'll have to send them back for us. I'm like, no. Here,
cost
look.
You $20 to send them back.
Yeah, exactly. They're from the States. So believe it or not, I can't find anybody in Australia who does those void tags. So.
Okay.
So that was a bit disappointing. But anyway,
it's a start.
Now I know what not to buy, I suppose. I'm glad I prefer to pay the $7 and it not work than to, you know, pay $150 to get them custom made and still find out they don't work.
Yeah, that's it.
So, and also, after 3 months of complaining and whinging at Optus that the problem isn't at my end, they finally decided to send me a new modem, which I haven't put in. It only turned up today, and I'm umming and ahhing like, should I try it this afternoon? Should I wait? So, as it turns out, I decided to wait, which seems like it might have been, with the way tonight's been going, was a good idea. It's the same as the old modem. It's a Netgear wireless high-speed cable modem. It does have a newer version of firmware on it, and the power supply seems to be a little bit bulkier than the other one, so we'll wait and see how that turns out. The ironic part is, since last, what was it, probably last Wednesday, when I rung them up and complained to them again, I haven't had a single dropout, the phone hasn't played up, my speed's been good, so I don't know. So, it's
always the way it goes, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at Ozzy, who pops into the chat room occasionally. He did some the Android shows. He had the same problem, and from what I've gathered, within the last few days, they actually mostly fixed them. So, we'll wait and see what happens there. But apparently, it took him 6 months to get it sorted. So, I don't know what the deal is. I don't understand why. Optus used to be great. I used to be with Optus Cable. Never had a problem. A couple of years go by, and, yeah, have nothing but dramas with them. So, I don't know. But I guess, look at Vodafone. Same thing. It used to be a brilliant little company. You know? They're cheap, had good service. You could always get signal, well, for the most part.
People found out about them and then jumped on them.
Well, it wasn't even that, I think. It was when Three and Vodafone merged and they shut down the Three towers. So
okay,
they just used the Vodafone tower, so suddenly they had twice as many people, basically overnight, using half as much hardware.
Yep.
So I think that's what kind of killed them. And if their ads are to be believed, they've sorted that out now. But I don't know quite yet if I'm going to believe them. Still, not from what I've heard, anyway. So,
yep.
Well, actually, a couple of weekends ago, we went to Evans Head, which is fairly major, a relatively decently sized tourist town on, northern New South Wales. Northern New South Wales. Oh, I can't speak. And it's all those beers I should have had. actually, to be honest, what it is, it's the fact it's about 50 degrees in here, because I've had to turn my fan right down because there's just too much background noise. I think that's part of the problem. But we went to Evans Head the other weekend, and a mate of ours is on Vodafone prepaid, because they pay $20 and get 3 months credit. They didn't have any signal. But right in the middle of Evans Head, for some reason, they had one bar. I don't know where that was coming from, because as soon as you'd go out of the middle of town, you had no signal at all. So I wouldn't think there'd be a transponder in the middle of the city that's giving you one bar of signal. It doesn't seem to make sense. We're going to give them a tower. We're going to turn it right down and see if anyone notices. So... But Vodafone, get your act together. Optus, get your act together. Dodo, get your act together. That list is really long. Telstra, after being with Telstra for 18 months and having nothing but problems with their online billing, they sent me an email the other day saying, "Your online account has been created. You can now log in." But cool, they've finally fixed it. I logged in the other day. "Your username or password is not valid. Please reset your account." Okay, fine. They've changed something. That's okay. Reset it. Then it goes... Then I went logged in. I logged into the primary website, which is okay. I'm a member of the Telstra website. You go to my account, and it says, "Your account has not been enabled for online activation. Please click here to enable it." Okay, cool. So I clicked here to enable it. And it goes through it. It says, "Your account's now enabled. Would you like to enable online billing?" Cool, yep, click on that, go through that, all the online billing stuff. This is taking me an hour by this point. And says, "All right, you're all ready to go. Click here to log in to your account." I click to log into the account. It says, "Your account has not been activated for online billing." I'm like, great. So after 18 months, I'm still in exactly the same spot I was. I mean, it's, not like they're a small company that's struggling for technicians or something. Seriously, what's the deal? How hard is it to have an online account?
Oh, that was probably the 1,000 people that they sacked here.
Yeah. Oh, who did that? National Australia Bank.
Something like that.
They had a big security breach where you could, with your... I can't remember what it was. Something about you could log in with the app.
The phone, wasn't it?
Yeah, you log in with the phone app.
And it logged into random accounts or something, didn't it?
Yeah, you could access random people's accounts. So they shut down the phone app again for the third time in 3 months. And then they sacked like 200 security experts or something. Because clearly it was their fault.
Yep.
So companies are good like that. So you, I believe, have a new toy.
I do.
What pray tell is it?
The PlayStation Vita.
Sounds like a Weet-Bix.
See on the screen if I can get rid of all the glare.
Good luck with that. Okay, so explain basically what the Vita is in terms of... It's what? New generation PlayStation Portable.
Yes, it's the next generation of the PlayStation Portable. It's got a touchscreen on it, so you can...
Sweet.
Play games with swipe. Like, I've got Uncharted, new version of that for the PlayStation. And in the climbing sections of that, you can actually use the controls to climb up the walls, or you can touch the screen and draw your path on where you want to go. And there's also, on the back of it, is a touch panel on the back. So there's a game called Escape Plan. You can touch the front screen, and that'll push objects into the background of the game. Or you can touch the back screen, and that'll push objects into the front of the game. So what you got to do is you got to get your... There's two blokes you got to play as, and you've got to get them from one side of the screen to the other. And it's just a puzzle game. And by doing that, you've got to push objects out of the way, or you can pinch the front and back screen, and that'll make him run. It's pretty good game. Nice graphics on it. It's got a 5-inch OLED screen. It's got the dual nub sticks, or dual analog sticks. Two shoulder buttons.
Has it got a G-sensor in it?
Yeah, it's got... I did have the specs up here on computer here a minute ago.
I noticed that they definitely stepped up with the graphics, because I've got a few screen grabs here of Wipeout. The game you've got, Uncharted, which and then they've got FIFA Football, which looks almost lifelike, and then this really trippy thing looked like Escape Plan. It's like the Nightmare Before Christmas.
It's just black and white puzzle game. It's got a ARM Cortex A9 processor in it.
Wow!
And that's actually a 4-core processor. So basically it's what's going into your phones, mobile phones.
And like, obviously it'll probably have like a dedicated...
iPhones and Android phones.
Dedicated GPU and stuff.
It has got a GPU in it. I don't know what the name of it was. It was supposed to be 4 times better than what the iPhone 4S has. So that'll be good to see what they can do with it. It's a OLED touchscreen. It's got a front and rear camera in it. I don't reckon they're too high quality cameras, but I haven't used it yet. It actually come with a augmented reality game. You get these cards, and I haven't played with it yet, but you're supposed to be able to do all kinds of different things. Like, you can be looking, say you're sitting in your lounge room, you can have one of these cards sitting in front of you on the table or whatever. And when you put the camera facing towards the card, it'll show different things on the screen while still showing your lounge room. Yeah. Yep. It's got a GPS in it, Wi-Fi. If you pay the extra money, you can get one with 3G. But I'm not real sure whether you can play games over 3G, like multiplayer games or anything like that.
Well, you'd think that's why they'd be on there.
I only paid for the Wi-Fi version, because I'm only going to use it around home type thing.
Is that 348 for a Wi-Fi only, or 418 for the 3G, apparently?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it looks pretty cool. Like, they're showing one here, they're showing a sniper game and basically you move the whole device around and it's like your sniper scope. So
yep. It's got Bluetooth in it as well, so you can, I assume you can pair it with your PlayStation. You can do, to back up all your games and that, you can connect it to your PC or you can connect it to your PlayStation.
Now you're saying that the games come in one of two ways?
Yeah, you can, I've got to put up on the screen. There is your standard Xbox case, and up next to it is the PlayStation Vita case.
So it's about half the size. So if you turn that sideways, it'll be about half the...
It's nearly...
No, okay, same thickness.
Standard thickness, basically, but probably a bit thinner. And basically all you get inside is the card actually goes into this little slot just there.
There's a lot. You get
probably a piece of paper in the other side, tells you how to install the game or save it.
And you're saying that you can either buy it that way or you can download.
Yep, if you've got a PlayStation Network account, I think they've just changed. Actually, I think it's still called that on the Vita. It's you can log in with your PlayStation Network account and you can buy games as a digital download. But you do have to buy a separate memory card because it doesn't have any internal storage. And because Sony decided to use their own memory cards,
Sony Duo.
It is, no, it's something not different again.
Oh, okay. You know why? Because there was all these adapters out to run micro SDs inside Duos. That's why they changed them again.
Yeah. Probably. Well, it's probably not much. It's probably a little bit bigger than a micro SD card, but it's similar sized.
Oh, okay.
It's just so a different shape.
For those of you who are interested, if you watching the video, there's a screen grab of what it looks like inside. There's obviously, you can see the battery on the back pedal there, and the touchscreen obviously must be behind that, the rear sensitive touchscreen thing. You can see where the 3G card and the Wi-Fi it sits. You can see the memory card. So some of the adapters are standard. Headphone, the slots for the game cards. The camera there looks like a little 1.3 megapixel front-facing camera. And then you can see, obviously, a lot of the technology is standard. Like the controller pads are just the good old touchpad, carbon touchpad things. Obviously under these heat sinks here would be where your CPU and your graphics card is, but in terms of, you know, there's no earth shattering technology in there. These boys pulled it apart, the Neki's TED step by step guide. They basically pulled it apart and they found that a 3.7 volt 2.2 milliamp, or 2200 milliamp, so basically 2 amp battery, 4 antenna modules, 3
just one note there. The battery is not interchangeable, so basically once it goes flat you have to put on a charger.
Although you can buy those, I've seen already, there's the expansion packs for them.
Yeah, it basically just plugs into the connection at the bottom of the PS Vita.
Two cameras, OLED panel as you'd expect, and the backside touch sensor. But there's not a lot, obviously, the CPU and the GPU is the big draw card, and the OLED screen are the big draw cards to that. The technology itself isn't, you know, super special or anything. There's no, you know, nothing you wouldn't expect to see in there. There's basically they're saying, you know, 4 screws to pull it apart, couple of screws on the sides, Yeah, and then once you open it up, it's... They basically described it as a PSP in terms of the way it looks on the inside, so... So, yeah. But, I mean, it's pretty... In terms of, I guess, what it is, it's really... I suppose... Being a dedicated gaming device, you know... Exactly, like it's what a phone can't do at this point, just because a phone still has so much underlying things it has to do. It has to be a phone as well as those other things, whereas this device just has to be this device, you know. So,
a gaming device.
I think the biggest complaint that I've found so far is it should have had a bigger battery in it. Because apparently, the battery life's horrible.
Supposed to be somewhere between 3 and 5 hours, depending on how you play, what you play, and.
See, what was the PSP?
Wi-Fi or 3G?
Wasn't the PSP a lot more than that?
Yeah, it was about 7 hours or something, I think.
Mm. See, I mean, if this thing only lasts 3 hours or so. The main thing I can see it used for is people on, you know, plane trips or train trips or something. If it's only lasting 3 hours, it's not really going to be long enough for that, is it? You know, like, by the time you play a bit in the lounge and then, you know, play a bit in the plane. So, yeah. I don't know, that could be a bit of a problem. But
I've had the screen brightness turned nearly right down. Yep. And it still looks really good, even playing in daylight.
Yeah, well, I guess that's one way to, you know, turn your Wi-Fi off, turn your screen brightness Bluetooth, down, Bluetooth, all that. Yeah, turn all that off, and it will help.
It does actually have, in the menu, it does have airplane mode. So if you don't want to use any of your Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or your GPS, you can actually just tap that and turn everything's off, basically, so you're just using it as a standalone system.
So, and the that's a picture of the memory card. It kind of actually, it looks like a micro SD with a slot cut in the side of it, so it'd be interesting to see how long it takes before someone makes an adapter up. Knowing how much Sony's going to charge for that.
Yeah, well, I bought a 16 gigabyte, and that was $60.
Hmm. You're purely paying for the name, because I can go down to WoW, which has gone into receivership, I found out, and buy a 64 gig SD card for, you know, whatever it is, $40 or something. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was interesting.
Expensive for the memory card.
I found out. I think it was on the news last night. That WoW went into receivership yesterday. They basically just said, "Yep, well, you know, someone's got to buy us." there wasn't any. You know, they basically just said that it was placed into receivership after the group was hit by a $20 million bad debt. Which is funny, because last month, I think it was, they released... Their figures had dropped a little bit, but they were saying they were still manageable. So... But apparently there's 15 stores and 500 employees. There's 10... Queensland stores, 2 in New South Wales, 1 in Victoria, 1 in the ACT, and 1 in Northern Territory. The group has been negatively affected by a bad debt of $20 million owed by a related company, Aristocon, which collapsed in 2010. So basically, yeah, it looks like it's been subject to declining sales and profitability, which has escalated in recent months. Lay-bys will be honoured. Gift cards won't be, of course. Which I don't know for the life of me how they can legally not honour a gift card, because cash was paid to purchase that product. So I don't understand how they can do that. I think somebody tried that a couple of years ago as well. It was, I think it was one of the book, Angus and Robinson or something, tried the same thing. Okay. They went to receivership and said, oh, we're not going to honour gift cards. So all the gift card holders just took out a class action lawsuit and went, no, you will. So yeah, well, so if you need something from WoW.
Says here, Mr. Stewart says, $4 million in employee entitlements have been protected under the federal government's general employee entitlements and redundancy scheme.
Which basically means that, you know, that there's enough in the slush fund to allow the employees to be paid out the total rights. That's a good idea. I mean, 4 million sounds like a lot. There's 500 employees. It's got to pay all their wages, their sick benefits, their holidays, and as well as their, what do they call it, redundancy payouts and stuff as well. So, you know, it adds up pretty quick. Plus, that's, I mean, you got to think that's a before tax amount as well. So, you know, all the taxes and they've still got to pay all the work cover payments, everything that's related to that. They've still got to pay out of that fund. But no, that's good. Apparently, they've got to find somebody pretty quick. They've got, you know, a handful of weeks left to find somebody. Otherwise, they're going to shut their doors. So now is a really good time to go to WoW and basically name your price.
Get a good sale, I reckon.
So, although someone did that a couple of years ago, I think it was, it was another electronics retailer. It was like Tandy, or it wasn't, but it was someone like that. And they went into receivership, and to recoup the costs, the receivers actually set the prices on the products, and they actually made all the prices dearer than you could walk into any other shop to buy the same product for. And they wondered why nobody was coming in and buying anything on sale.
Yeah. And they probably wondered why they went into receivership.
Well, they went, I think it was because you got Clive Anthony and Clive Peters. And I can't remember which one of them bought the other one. I can't remember which way it worked. But they, that's who it was, actually. It was whoever. I think, like, Clive Anthony's still around and they bought out Clive Peters or something like that anyway, and their prices used to be okay, and the day that this changeover happened, their prices went up like 30% trying to recoup all these costs.
And they probably put out ad saying sale.
Yeah, it was massive closing down sale, everything must go, you know, end of months, it's got to be gone, we're shutting down, no, you know, no offer refused, and they wouldn't budge. You'd walk in there and it was, everything was 30% above ticketed price, and they wouldn't come down on anything. It's like, yeah, that's good. So, wasn't one of the more successful sales. So, got a couple other interesting stories here. I find them interesting because they're just, you know, a couple of them are a little bit out of, you know, off the left. What's that expression? I don't even know. Over that way.
From left field.
That's it. The field over there. Yeah, that one.
Over the left there somewhere.
Yeah. The first one is a new, obviously the Google streetcars have been out and about again. And there's a new bout of incidences caught on the Google streetcar. There's this one here is a camper van, or it's actually a little Volkswagen camper in Rio de Janeiro. it's basically just on fire and everybody's just sort of standing there looking at it. Nobody's really in any... you can, do you have any sort of responsibilities if you're a camera car? Like, do you, this one here's a classic.
Turn your blind eye.
Yeah. Apparently, it's a prostitute basically is touring for work in the town of Santa Perpetua de Magunda. Yeah, I'm sure I butchered that. But basically, yeah, as the Google Street cars going past, the prostitute's out and about walking the street, and so that's always good. I mean, it's not like these street cars are easy to miss. They've got these massive, big, chunky cameras and all sorts of equipment on the roof. You can see them coming a mile away.
The camera is actually like about 2 feet above the roof.
Yeah, and it's on a... Well, there's... I think there's 8 cameras. Or 6 cameras or something. Or is it... I know there's multiple cameras up there anyway. And they, basically look right down. And actually, in some of the street view shots, if you tilt it right down, you can occasionally see the front of the car. So that's sort of, the area they cover. Yeah, and they're a couple of foot high, and there's usually big stickers on the car saying Google Street View. So it's not like, they're being inconspicuous. And yet she's decided to look at the camera. So that was clever. There's another one here. Basically, I actually went and had a look at this photo on the Street View, and this is behind the car as it's coming up the street. There's basically an accident that's happened. The way it looks on Street View is the car's actually, the Google Street View's caused it, because there's nothing in front of it, and then as you get beside the camera and as the car moves forward, you pan around, and by the time it's got that far in front and you're looking behind the car, there's people there have gone to the aid of this person who's on the ground. So it's, I don't know what's happened there, but it's like the Street View cars actually caused that one. So I thought that one, the good lawsuit there. And this is the thing you normally actually see, because you can see the camera car coming from a mile away. So these guys basically just saw it coming, and they decided to pose, put on masks in Mexico, and just pose for the camera. What's ironic is because they have number plate recognition and facial recognition, the Wolfman dude, his face is fine, but the two guys wearing the Scream masks, their faces are actually blurred out. It's recognised a Scream mask as a face. So, I'm not sure.
Just looking for the general two eyes and mouth.
Yeah, I'm assuming so. Because I've seen some signs on buildings and things that have smiley faces and stuff on them. like floppy disks, computers. Theirs was a smiling computer monitor. And they're all blurred out. I don't know what's with this kid. Basically, this young kid saw the camera car and he's decided to run and hide. So I don't know if he's trying to be anonymous or he's just done something and hoping nobody noticed. Or where were you on the day? Yeah. I'm actually on Street View, out at the Port of Brisbane. We're working out there and we saw the camera car coming. So we actually put out witches hats with a traffic control stop go guy there so that we could make sure we're all ready for it to come past. So they've updated it since then, but I've got some screenshots of it somewhere. That was actually a fun day. I actually got to talk to the guy. He stopped down the road at the cafe and went and had a chat to him, and they were getting paid $600 a day to drive around and take photos.
Wasn't there in America there was a place where they had a house burning or something, and didn't Google actually take that picture down?
Yeah, they've done it a few times. There's been a couple of there was one where a guy got shot. There's been a few incidences where you can just complain to Google and they'll take it down. You know,
I was going to say, you can actually, because in Germany, a lot of people, I think it is, have refused to have their address or house or.
Mm. And the they actually get their house. Have you seen those? What they actually do.
I haven't looked at them.
They basically say there's a row of houses. There's 400 houses in this street. They all look identical, you know, and from the street view, you couldn't tell them apart. They all look exactly the same, except there's a brown blob where a house used to be. You know, it's not that they've magically made the house disappear. They've sort of just gone, like, got paintbrush and gone put over the top of this house. So now everybody in the house, in the street, everybody else in the street has good, you know, manicured lawns, nice trees, beautiful fences, nice garden, and you've got this big brown smudge at the top of your house. What was actually happening was people were actually coming along and egging their houses, because they're so obvious now that, you know, they used to be indistinguishable. Nobody could figure out where they were. But now they're so obvious, all these snobs who wrote in and complained about it got their houses egged and got rocks thrown at them. So, although the one thing they were doing in the UK, because lead prices are so high, they use the lead shingles and the lead flashing on the houses, on the roofs. So what people were actually doing was using Google Earth and just looking through the estates to find houses that had the old lead shingles, and they'll wait until the people are at work and they were flogging all the shingles off the roof.
Can't take a few.
So it has its downsides too, but
it does.
It's all good. Okay, and well,
was it a house or something in England, I think, apparently one of the sons or something of this house had drawn a large penis on top of the roof, and it wasn't known until Google Earth had taken a picture of the house and that they could zoom right in and seen it.
Yes. There's lots of stuff like that actually on Google Earth. It's quite interesting sometimes. You just sort of have a bit of a look around and see what you find. Of course, if you're in major Brisbane CBD, you can use near maps. Oh, excuse me. I'm not tired. You can use near maps, and it actually is a much higher resolution. It's actually airplanes fly over and take the images. Yeah, it's really high resolution. You can, like, see quite clearly, you know, individual tiles on roofs and things like that. So near maps is actually pretty cool. And it's fun to find out where you were. Like, you try and find where you were that day that it was taken. Because on near maps, they actually tell you the day the photo was taken. They tell you the date. So you can actually figure out where you were on that day. Yeah, or if you're somewhere in between. I found myself on the Story Bridge once. I found myself out at the Port of Brisbane. So at one point,
quite photogenic then.
Yeah, at one point, I think I was in like 5 different places at the same day. At the same time. So it's pretty cool. So we've all heard rumors about the iPad 3, and, you know, it's been released what it's supposed to look like, and apparently Apple haven't had enough of the what is it, the Mighty Mouse? They've decided that
the Touch Mouse, Magic Mouse,
that's it. They've decided that their iPhone 5...
That's the latest one.
...should look like their mouse. So apparently, obviously, it's all rumours, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But there's this Italian designer, Federico Cicerisi. He basically got all the rumours that were floating around about how this thing is going to look, and he created the mock-up based on the rumours. So I have to admit, I actually don't mind the design of it. It'd be completely impractical. It'd be really hard to hold. It'd be really hard to find. It'd be impossible to put down. It'd be really slippery. It'd be perfect for Apple. There's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't release it.
Well, if the mouse doesn't work, then it should make the phone like it too.
Yeah, you know.
I've got one of those mice, and I do not like it at all.
Is that the one that's got the reverse scroll thing on it? It scrolls the wrong way?
That's in the operating system.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know
The mouse is very uncomfortable. It's like you got to sort of hold it on the side with your... like pinching it with a couple of fingers, and then you got to try and use it. And there's no like real meat to the mouse, so you can't rest your hand on it.
Hmm. Well, that's useful.
Yeah. Because basically the whole top of it, down to probably the last inch of it on the back, is touch sensitive.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. Apple... they come out with some great products, they really do. But they come out with some stupid things as well. And that's a classic example of it. Like, they put design over function. And then they charge you a fortune for it. I mean, it's only been the last couple of years they've finally realised they need two buttons on their mice. You know, so... but... I don't know. I guess people pay for it. I mean, you did.
I bought it secondhand off eBay.
Yeah, you still bought it.
Doesn't the fact that somebody got rid of it
doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah, it probably does.
So, I mean, people, you know, go crook at me, and some of my mates go crook at me because they go, "Oh, you know, you're against Apple," and I'm not. And I wish people would stop saying I am. I treat all systems basically equally. I'm against bits and pieces of all companies. Apple just happens to be my biggest gripe because they're one of the most active in doing stupid things. You know, they do great things. They release the iPhone, they release the iPad. They're fantastic devices in and of themselves. But within that, they'll do stupid things. Like, that. How long did it take them to have copy and paste? You know, something as simple as that.
Yeah, that was about 2 years, I think.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's my point. They do great things, and then they do lots of little silly things to make those great things not as good as they should be. And I understand why they do it. You know, they have a 5-year plan on a device. Look at the iPhone, the iPad. They release the version 1, and as they release version 2, 3, 4, they gradually make them better. But all the other manufacturers, well, almost all the other manufacturers except Microsoft, but they're a whole different basket case, basically take a product, then make the product as good as they can at the time, and then in 12 months time they release another product that's fairly different, that's as good as it can be at the time. They don't make this one product last, you know, 5 years. You know, even car manufacturers don't do that anymore. They change their products every couple of years now because they've realized that people don't want something to drag out and be not as good as it could be. I mean, if when the iPhone first came out, there was no copy and paste because it was physically impossible to have copy and paste on the device, okay, fine. But it clearly wasn't because other devices were doing it, you know. So, I mean, I've got the first Windows mobile phone I've still got sitting around here somewhere, and I've got a monochrome PDA that goes back about... oh, crikey. Goes back probably nearly 15 years. And it had copy and paste. So, you know, like... I don't know. Maybe... I mean, I...
Apple like to perfect it.
What? Copy and paste was so difficult?
Well...
you know,
it's how they wanted to implement it.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I used to love, you know, I had some friends when I was going through school and just after I left school who were doing art courses and graphic design and video editing and stuff like that. And hands down, every time I'd say, go and buy a Power Mac or, you know, a G 3 or whatever they were at the time, because it's going to be the best device for what you need it to do. But these days, I can't say that. I can't say, go and buy a Mac because it will do that better than a PC. You know, it just won't. A PC will do everything a Mac will do at a third or a quarter of the price. And this is why I have issues with a lot of Mac fanboys, because they seem to think that isn't the case anymore. I mean, there are exceptions to every rule. You know, there are still some things that the iPad and the iPhone will do and probably will continue to do for 5 years better than Android. But most of that is because they've got one device and one operating system, which in itself, that is a good reason to do that. But in terms of, you know, take the new, you know, Power Mac or something like that, and you look at the price of that, and then you look at the comparative, you know, IBM compatible equivalent, regardless of whether it's running Windows, Linux, or even a Hackintosh. You know, you're just paying so much more for no real benefit these days.
Also, there's a technical support side of it that probably
to be honest,
comes into some of that cost.
Yeah, but most people don't use that. Most people don't even know it's there. I mean, you could speak to a lot of Mac users and they wouldn't even have a clue that their Mac has after-sales service. You know? But having said that, if you want to keep your warranty on a Mac, you have to go to a Mac authorized, you know, repair center. And there's like 3 in Australia. I mean, there's not, but it seems like it, because every time
all the Apple stores have got their what do they call them? Geniuses?
Yeah, your Apple stores do. There's how many of those? You know, there's a handful of those. You know. And
if
you're
how many there is in Australia a lot, but
there's not many.
Probably 5.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and if you're in the middle, let's say you've just bought yourself a new MacBook Air because you want to travel, and you're travelling around Australia, and you get to Alice Springs and your MacBook Air dies, and you take it to the local computer shop, well, he's just going to throw it in the bin and sell your netbook because there's nothing he can do. You know, and that's part of the reason I just can't recommend Macs anymore. And I see it time and time again. People always say, oh, once you've used an iPhone, you know, you won't use anything else. I probably personally have 15 or 20 fairly good friends that have all switched to Android. So, and they don't use, they still have iPads. They'll use their iPad, I have to admit, because the iPad's still better than an Android tablet. But for their everyday phone, they'll use their Android phones, hands down, every time. So, yeah, I don't know.
Also, it depends how much money you've invested in apps.
Well, if you're on an Android, generally none.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Like, that's the thing. I've got, you know, 100 or so apps on my phone, and it hasn't cost me anything.
Yep.
Well, there are, like, 3 apps I've bought, but I haven't had to. I've just bought the license to support the developer, because they're fantastic apps that I can't be without. But they do have an ad-supported free version of the same apps, which are every bit as good. And in 95% of the apps, you can actually turn the ads off. So, you know, I don't know. And it's not that, don't get me wrong, Android is a flaky operating system. It's not brilliant. It's certainly not as good as it could be. But I think, I don't know. I have a harder time finding fault with it, mainly because it's open and, you know, things like that, I suppose. I don't know. I know I'm ranting, but yeah, there's just that price. I mean, they used to say value for money, which used to be right, but these days it's not. You know, you really don't get any benefit buying, certainly not in the desktop world, and really not really in the laptop world. You don't get that much of a benefit these days. Not nowhere near as much as she used to. You know. So I don't know. Anywho, I'm not sure how we got there, but... No, I think the other reason I've got the shits with Apple is because they keep suing everybody.
It's ongoing.
It's horrible.
Do you listen to Tech News Today?
When I get a chance to, yeah.
Yeah. They always have their patent wars. Tells you who's suing who of the day.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? I know, yep. You know, it's got beyond... I mean, they started off doing it to protect their trademarks and copyrights and patents and intellectual property and all that crap. But now it's just got to the point, it's literally, you know... There's an expression I really want to use and then realised I can't. but it involves monkeys and footballs. You know, like, it's really not beneficial to anybody. And think how much it's costing them to make these lawsuits, how much more functional the company would be if that money went into increasing the performance of the company instead of going into the pockets of lawyers, you know. So, I don't know. But then again, Australia's not getting a whole lot better these days, especially not what happened after the vote for Rudd and
Miss Horseface.
Red-headed Horseface. So yeah. That unfortunately was expected to happen that way.
Can't believe so many people have confidence in her all that much.
It's well, mainly the people. It's not so much that the party has confidence in her, it's the fact that the party can control her. So that was the biggest problem with Rudd, and it was the same when Hawke got overthrown. They wanted to actually try and do the right thing and try to do what they're supposed to do, which is run the country. And their little minions didn't appreciate that. And that's basically what happened. You know, the worst part about it is, okay, fine, Julia got back in, she's in for another 6 months or 18 months or whatever it is until the election. And then after that, she's not going to be in anymore. So I don't understand what the big deal was. You know, nobody's going to vote for her other than that 3% or whatever it is that keeps showing up on the polls. So, but anyway, that's a, if you want to hear more about that, I'm pretty sure you can listen to Chewing Fat.
I just
Chewing
had
the
one
Fat
question.
This week.
Can they give me the NBN before they kick her out?
Are you in a you in one of her seats, are you?
Because
if you're not, you won't get it. Who holds power? You don't know.
I'm not real sure who's going to.
Yeah,
out.
Unless it's one of her seats. No, neither do I. But unless it's one of her seats, you won't get it because you look at just about every place on the NBN, and it's one of their party seats. So.
Yeah.
So. Because I'm not in one of their
Wi-Fi version.
Theoretically, a well managed Wi-Fi version will still give you the speeds anyway. Because the bottleneck's not at the end user; the bottleneck's at the exchange. So regardless of how they get the data to the end user, if they don't fix up the exchanges and the cabling and the undersea cables, it's going to be irrelevant anyway. So.
But it was only 12 megabit. I want the 100.
As I keep saying to people, it's not really the download. It's the upload. Even if you download a lot of stuff, without a decent upload speed, you won't get the download speed. So because the servers can only receive so much data from you, they'll actually throttle you. So regardless of how good your download speed is, if you haven't got a good upload speed, it's just not going to work. So... a 12 megabit synchronous speed, 12 up, 12 down, will be 100 times quicker than what I've got now, which is 1 meg up and 100 meg down because I can't practically use that 100 meg down anyway. I realistically can't download much quicker than 10 or 12 meg now anyway, because my upload speed can't get the data back up to the server to tell the server what's going on.
To say what it's received.
Yeah. So, you know, and it'd be worse for you because your upload's, what, 300 or 400k?
Killer pits.
Killer wasps.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's only 37 kilobytes.
Yeah.
Is me maximum, I think.
You know. So realistically,
which is pretty low.
You realistically couldn't download it quicker than 5 or 6 meg anyway. Even if you were able to, you wouldn't, like, even if you had the speed, you couldn't do it because your upload speed wouldn't allow it. So, to be honest, I'd be much happier with, you know, 10-10 or 12-12 or whatever synchronous speed than, you know, a 1-100, which is what I've got now. So,
yeah, with the NBN, most of them are doing the 140.
Yeah.
As the top tier.
Well, I mean, you don't... See, that's probably overkill, because you'd probably be hard-pressed to try and use 40 up anyway. I mean...
Yeah, unless you're doing, like, a HD.
Well, not really, because...
But even then, like, even sending out to Justin TV or Ustream, they only accept a megabit, I think it is, isn't it?
Oh, you can pay for more. Ustream, Livestream, which is who we use, only accepts a total of 600k. So we put up about 540 or 530 video and 70 audio.
Yep.
You can pay to have that increase. But the thing is, I mean, what it means is I could put up one to Ustream, one to Justin, one to Livestream, one to whoever. So I could have all those different streams going up. It would be impossible for me to upload to one server at 40 anyway, because they're not going to have the infrastructure to handle that. So it would be beneficial in terms of I can spread out my upload bandwidth how I want it, but it's not really, you know, for example, like if I upload my YouTube video, it's, you know, the average talkback text about 2 gig in HD, it goes up at 720, it's about 2 gig for an hour episode. It takes me at the moment about 4 hours or so to put that up. You know, but the thing is, even if I had 40 meg up, as things stand at the moment, with the congestion in the undersea cable, I'm not really going to be getting that much more up anyway, because I'm pretty much only uploading at 500 or 600k out of my available 1.5 anyway. So as things stand at the moment, it's not really going to be all that beneficial. They have to do much more backbone infrastructure work. So,
yeah.
You know, that's particularly true with somewhere like you guys in Tassie who feed undersea cable to mainland, you know.
Yep.
So you've got the undersea cable from Tassie to the mainland and then the undersea cable from us to, you know, Samoa or wherever it goes, I don't know, north.
Singapore, isn't there?
Singapore, something like that. Hawaii, yeah. Or something. It goes, you know, there are a couple of them, but they're maxed out now. So I really don't know, you know, without all that other infrastructure added in, the NBN's only really going to help if I want to send you something.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to help if I want to send somebody overseas something. So we shall wait and see, I suppose. Just quickly, just before we wrap up, there's a lot of things about, you know, electric cars. Are they good? Are they bad? Are they, you know, worth the money? Things like that. But there's been a couple of stories out recently with the Tesla, the iMEV, the Mitsubishi iMEV, and also the Nissan Leaf, basically saying, oh, and Holden will be bringing in the Volt, which is the Chevy Volt, so that'll be pretty cool, actually. But what they do is, the way they're supposed to work is like a golf buggy. After you finish driving them, you bring them home, and then you plug them in the charger. And that's the way they work. You know, they're designed to always be on a float charge. It keeps the batteries maintained, keeps them in good condition. But what's been happening is owners have been driving them to within a handful of k's of empty, parking them in the garage for a few weeks, and coming back, and the cars have been bricked because the voltage has got that low that the computer has shut all the systems down. And depending on the state of discharge, it's possible to destroy your battery packs. You know, and suddenly you're looking, you know, for 30 or 40 grand to fix, replace all your battery packs. Now, Tesla, Mitsubishi... Are these
prices in Australian?
Yeah. They are, because it's only... car. Well, they're in Australian, but they're a direct conversion. They're not actually correct, because the... The Tesla, for example, is only 110 or something US. And obviously with the exchange rate the way it is, it's going to be less. So I don't actually know.
Yep.
I think what they've tried to do is make that with import taxes and everything, but then they've got that wrong because they've done the conversion the wrong way around. So the prices in the article are actually completely out of whack. But the principle's the same. You know, manufacturers are saying there is a certain amount of owner care required, the same as there is with any vehicle. You have to do some things. You have to make sure your batteries are charged. You know, you have to go and get them serviced to make sure the motors are functioning the way they should be, the batteries are functioning the way they should be. One thing I've realised is that the people who have the money to buy these, if somebody has, let's say it is 200 grand, the people who have $200,000 to throw at a car don't maintain their vehicles. Now, I install car batteries daily. The people who have, you know, $500 Lasers and van Commodores and things like that look after their vehicle because they can't afford not to have it. So the car's regularly maintained. This is, you know, general. There's always exceptions, but, you know, the cars are usually well maintained. They usually make sure they get them serviced regularly. They get them checked out, everything you'd expect. The people who own the $100,000 plus vehicles, like I did a Lexus today, I did a Mercedes today, I did a BMW, and I did a Porsche, and I did a Ferrari. It was almost like I went to an exotic car dealership, but I didn't. I actually just sort of did them all today. They're all in different places, funnily enough. But these cars had been beaten on. They hadn't been serviced. You know, they were full of corrosion from batteries that have been failing for the last 6 months. They haven't had any of their logbook servicing done. The tyres are bald. The paints, you know, the thing haven't been washed. They're covered in dust. The oil's black. You know, these are people who don't care about their vehicles because at the end of 2 years, they're going to throw them away and buy another one. And the problem is...
Probably leased anyway.
Well, yeah, that's it too. But this is the issue with these expensive electric cars. The biggest problem is because they're expensive, only rich people are going to buy them, and the vast majority of rich people don't care. So the thing is, okay, they will flatten the battery, they'll leave them parked, the batteries will go dead flat, then they'll just pay the 30 grand, the 40 grand, whatever it is, to get the batteries fixed. But the thing is, they'll pay the 40 grand to get the batteries fixed, they'll go down to the hunting lodge or golf club or wherever it is rich people hang out, you know, and they'll complain to all their friends that their car broke down. They won't mention the fact that it was their fault. You know, I mean, the story basically goes on and says a certain amount of user, you know, care is involved, like all cars. And most of these batteries, most of the systems do have automatic cutoff. So once the batteries drop to a certain point, they will actually shut the system down to protect the batteries. The thing is, obviously if batteries are getting low, the system might be in a state where it's too low to actually do that, so it will completely flat. It'll go completely flat. But yeah, I mean, that's just common sense. Anything that uses a battery, you don't leave flat. Your mobile phone, your laptop, you know, whatever it is. When you get home, you plug it in. I mean, that's just what you do. So, look, I really think, as I said, this only affects, obviously, generally, it's going to be the richer you are, the more of a problem you're going to have. And that's only because they don't have respect for what they own, because they can afford 15 of them, you know. So,
I'm sure they've probably got an insurance policy against it, where if they do flatten the battery of some sort, where it ruins it, they can get it.
Oh, I doubt it, because it'd be negligence. You can only do it. I mean, if the batteries fail because of a problem, like some of the, I think it was the Leaf or the iMiV had a recall for half a dozen vehicles because something went pear shaped in the batteries.
Okay.
But if it's the same with a warranty for a battery. We'll warranty the battery for 3 years, but we don't cover abuse, neglect. We don't cover flat batteries. If the battery's flat, that's your fault. If a battery fails, it won't go flat. So people think, because they've got a flat battery, the battery's failed. But that's not true. If a battery fails, it will drop voltage, but it won't go flat. If a battery's sitting at 0 volts, there's a problem in the system that's drained the battery. So that's why warranties don't cover flat batteries, for that reason. And that's a whole other story, but I just have such a hard time getting people to understand that. Especially car yards. They're horrible. They'll buy a dodgy second-hand battery, put it in a car, and then ring us back in 3 weeks' time when the dodgy second-hand battery goes flat. Yeah, so. But yeah, so, I mean, it's just something to bear in mind if there are any listeners out there who are planning on spending $200,000 on an electric car. Or I think the iMiV is $50,000, I think it is, and I think the Holden Volt, or the Chevy Volt, will probably be around the same price as a Commodore, from what I understand, from a top-end Commodore, so that'll be interesting. I wouldn't mind getting one, actually. But see, Priuses are the same. Obviously, they've got an electric motor to charge the battery packs. But what people don't realise is they still have a little tiny, like, it's what they call an NS40. It's one of the smallest car batteries you can actually buy as their main battery that runs, it starts the engine, it runs the radio, it runs the computer, it runs the GPS, it runs the headlights. All this stuff is run off this little tiny battery. Yeah, and which I don't understand, because they've got massive batteries under them. But taxis, for example, on top of the stuff that's already running, they hook up their spotlights, they hook up their signage, they hook up their radios, they hook up their monitoring systems, they hook up their cameras. Everything comes off this little tiny battery, and then they ring up and complain that their batteries go flat. And it's like, yeah, and what do you want us to do? We told you that it happened. So
that's it. Too much drainage.
Well, that's just common sense. If your little tiny battery has a reserve capacity of 40 amps and you're pulling 100 amps, common sense tells you that it's going to go flat very quickly. You know, so. But anyway, I will actually do an actual episode on batteries, because I find them interesting. I don't care if you do. I find them interesting. I find them very understood. Even AutoLex actually don't understand how batteries work, most of them. Which is weird, because we'll go and fix up jobs that AutoLex have just finished doing and haven't worked because they've done them wrong. So, anyway. I think that was all we're going to talk about.
That was the last story?
Yeah. Probably running long, but oh well. that happens. So, Mr. Frosty, you are on Twitter.
I am. And you can find me, contact me, follow me at FR05TY.
That's it. Follow him. Everybody needs a stalker. Find out where he works and follow him home. And every so often, just when the cat sticks its head through the window, just stick your head back through the other way and have a look, see what's going on.
No, I wouldn't stick your head near the cat. Probably take it off.
Don't need a security alarm, you got the cat.
That's it.
Yes. So, alright, thank you, Frosty, for turning up. So, it was your week this week. It's PA's week next week, hopefully. And
fingers crossed.
Hopefully. If my computer, you know, doesn't completely explode between now and then. So, I'm going to have to do a bit of regular maintenance on my computer, I think. It's full of dust. So, it's due for a service. It's just like you service your car, you got to service your computer. So, that's actually the biggest problem is the last few weeks we've had it just been so sticky and humid that the dust has just absolutely collected on everything. So, that is the problem. So, alright, thanks, Frosty. And
vacuums and compressed air.
Yeah, that's it. Compressed air. And if you don't have a compressor, you can buy the air in a can, although it's incredibly expensive, but you only need one can to do a system, so
that's it.
Okay, you guys can contact me at Mr. Tomkinson, MRTOMKINSON, or Aussie TBT if you prefer. You can email me at tbt@thesecrethub.com. You can visit the TalkBackTech homepage at talkbacktech.com. You can post questions or send me questions on email or Twitter. Let us know if you've got any questions on technology in general, not just computers, but you know, technology as a whole. You know, solar, LEDs, whatever. All the information for the YouTube videos and the audio links are there as well. You can also search iTunes and the Listen app on Android. Search for TalkBack Tech. Remember, you can go to live.thesecrethub.com and radio.thesecrethub.com. They're both up 24/7. Go and check out what we've been up to in the last week. So, thanks everybody for hanging around, and I shall see you all next week. See you, Frosty.
See you later.